RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, a discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. This week, we're going to focus on a canary, a red bird, and Thea. So, I don't know, like, I don't,
she doesn't
have a bird avatar.
She doesn't get a name. Her, so.
No. Sorry.
We need Cisco to work on that from Flash.
We do need to get him in there. So maybe like Mockingbird. I mean, that might confuse everybody because that's an entirely different comic book company or whatever. But
we need something like some kind of bird whose belly shows, you know, some kind of
like a nuthatch or something like that. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, Nuthatch is probably not the best nickname for Thea.
That's okay. Okay, crazy tangent there, but anyway. So why don't you tell us about the episode that we watched this week, and then we'll get into discussion.
All right, episode 11 of season 3, Midnight City, January 28th, 2015. Midnight City. I feel like there should be some saxophones playing in the background, you know, and. Some bad 80s ballad or something.
I just kept thinking of Dustin Hoffman, you know, crossing the road. Hey, I'm walking here. But that was Midnight Cowboy. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was almost like that. This was written
like Midnight Caller, Midnight City. I think I see where you were going with the.
For some reason, any time I see midnight in the title of something, it rings 80s music or 80s, you know, entertainment to me for some reason. I don't know. It's just me. I have issues. Anyway, this episode was written by Wendy Miracle and Ben Sokolowski, not new names to us here. Directed by Nick Copas.
Also not a new name.
Not a new name either, yes. Yeah. All right, well, prepare you generals. The enemy comes on in gallant show. Their bloody sign of battle is hung out and something to be done immediately. But whither our emerald archer? He is not upon us. Thank you, Julius Caesar, Act 5, Scene 2, except for that Emerald Archer.
I was going to say, they didn't have Emerald Archer and Julius Caesar.
Yeah, no.
Very nicely done. That was great.
Ah, thank you very much. Yes, my Shakespeareanism is strong tonight. So anyway, our Emerald Archer is not upon us, so let's send the backup team. That sounds like a good plan, right? Maybe they can handle Danny Brickwell when he terrorizes the city, kidnaps the alderman, holds the Glades hostage, and makes earring fashion absolutely terrifying. Diggle and Roy try to handle this chaos that has ensued in Starling City, but, you know, Laurel intends to do her part as Canary, limping Canary. Unfortunately, they're not doing so hot. That is until Felicity realizes that her man in shiny armor, may have the right idea about being a hero. So she rejoins the team and gives them just enough edge to succeed in at least one mission. You know. Meanwhile, Oliver's recovering, but a brooding Maseo is going to leave him to return to Ra's al Ghul, or Ra's al Ghul, as he says. Mm-hmm. That's interrupted when the Demon's Head's minions find their secluded cabin and attack. Now, Oliver has to find some way back to Starling City before his team fails, the city falls, and creepy DJs start playing bad League of Assassins techno music.
Oh, yes, that is the scariest part. I think what's going to happen is Oliver's going to walk out, you know, he's at this cabin, and there's all these trees and stuff, and he's just going to take a couple steps to the side, and there's going to be a sign that says, like, Starling City, 5 miles. And he's like, oh.
Five miles.
I had no idea where I was. So.
Actually, we'd kind of like to see that. He just walks around the corner, you know, and he's like right in the Glades or something. It's the snowy part of Starling
right,
City.
Right, yeah, it's the, yeah, the southern... the northern part of Starling City there. So,
well, that's right.
We don't have a lot. I mean, other than kind of getting into speculation and spoiler stuff about casting for some new episodes. We don't have a lot of news, but we did find out some information. This week, DC Entertainment announced that they have two new, what they're calling Batman Unlimited films. They're going to be direct-to-video, which, well, maybe direct-to-DVD, I guess, or something like that, coming out on May 12th and then later in the year. And they're going to feature Batman, The Flash, Red Robin, Nightwing, and Green Arrow.
And oh, nice.
As they come up against the Penguin and his horde of cyber animals. So there's also going to be 22 two-minute shorts that will be available like on online and stuff to help promote this. And, oh, surprisingly, a toy line. So that's really, I think, what it's what's
that's
doing.
That's cool, you know.
There's also a Super Friend. They're doing a new Super Friend show that's Fisher-Price toy inspired. So it's going to have that kind of Fisher-Price chunky character look. It looks like it's got the Flash. I don't think it has Green Arrow in it, though.
I don't see him in the logo.
Yeah, he doesn't look like he's in the logo. But anyway, some upcoming, more upcoming chances for you to see animated Green Arrow. So that's pretty cool.
You know, I like things like this. First of all, I think it's kind of nostalgic because I was a big Super Friends fan, you know, back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, like the 70s, 80s version of Super Friends. But
yeah.
This kind of stuff is really good. It may not be your thing, and that's cool. You don't have to watch it. But it really kind of keeps the superhero genre open and available for younger audiences. Which is cool. This is kind of why the comic book line has continued for so many generations is because of, you know, it's appealing to young kids as well as older people these days. So
yeah, I didn't start reading comics until I was in my teens, in the mid 80s. And, but I could tell you all sorts of stuff. Well, mostly about DC characters just because of Super Friends and all of the various incarnations of those characters that were on TV on Saturday mornings. So,
yeah.
It's like, you know, the gateway, into, comic books and stuff like that. So,
absolutely.
Then we also got news that the Suicide Squad is coming back. They will be here in about 6 or 7 episodes, it looks like.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Amanda Waller, obviously it will be back. I'm hoping that will not be the first time we see her this season. Again, I am staunchly behind the fact that whatever's going on in Starling City this season, she has something to do with. So I'm still leaning towards that.
You're sticking with that, huh?
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, and we can talk a little bit about just like Brick. I mean, he's imposing and stuff like that, but I don't know that he's necessarily smart enough to come up with this. I mean, he wants to, you know, to kind of have this take over the Glades, but I mean, I don't know.
Well, I personally feel, you know, I was kind of holding on to hope that there was a season long, MacGuffin, if you will, or a season long threat. But to me, it doesn't feel like there really has been that thread throughout the season, other than, you know, the murder of Sarah, which keeps having, you know, repercussions in various ways, and I think it will continue out through the season. But
yeah.
But we haven't really seen a overall villain for the season or something that ties everything together, in my opinion. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're right. It'll be.
I mean, Ra's al Ghul's kind of been there, but
yeah, kinda.
I know, kinda. So I agree with you. I mean, I think that's. You know,
it was no undertaking, you know, it wasn't anything
right.
like that.
Right.
And,
So anyway. So Waller will be there. Deadshot, they said, will be back and Cupid will be joining the team. Bronze Tiger will not be, in the squad, coming up. And Shrapnel is, deceased. So, we will,
so he's not going to be with them.
Not at this point, unless they're just pieces of him, which. You know.
They'll just throw him at people. You know, just throw pieces of shrapnel
at people.
Take that.
And then there will be a new crossover between Arrow and Flash. Well, actually, two crossovers. One is coming later this year on Flash. Ray and Felicity will be visiting Star Labs also in about 6 or 7 episodes. And then Mark Guggenheim, the producer of Arrow, has said that the crossover that they had this year worked so well that they are planning to do the same thing next year and each and every year that the shows are on. So good news there. And I think, as we discussed on our Flash podcast, Scarlet Velocity, we're hoping it's more of a two-parter sort of thing where one show has the opening of it and then we conclude the storyline on the second episode instead of being kind of two distinct stories that have loose threads that run between them. I'd rather see something that's a straight two-parter.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Let's go for that.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's our news, and let's get into some of these discussion topics here. Let's see. Who do we want to start with? I guess Laurel, because that's kind of what I've heard, at least online, everybody talking about. We saw her last week pick up the mask of her dead sister and go out and become, you know, the Dark Justice in, you know, the city, whatever. To, and, you know, she is not exactly trained for this, as Roy points out to her. She has had training, but not in the same way that Roy talks about. You know, he says he's been trained by Oliver and he's lived his life on the street, so he's, you know, kind of got that advantage. And it seems like that she's just channeling the grief of losing her sister and losing Oliver and, you know, putting on this mask and jumping headlong into the fray here. What's your opinion of what we saw of her in this episode and her abilities? Is this what you were expecting to see, or were we thinking that maybe she was, you know, she'd do a little bit better?
I expected her to be better. I expected her to kind of have these natural abilities, but I'm glad she does not. I actually I'm really kind of liking how they're starting her off because it's much more realistic. I mean, she definitely would not be as good as Sarah. I mean, she just doesn't have that training. And we talked about this very early on in this season, how you know, you're going to be that kind of superhero like Oliver and Sarah, you've had to go through years of hardship and flat-out torture, really, you know.
5 years, Hellish Island, right.
Exactly. You go to 5 years, hellishisland.com. That's like the training center that they used. Laurel would not have those abilities. So I'm kind of glad they're not giving her that. What they need, in my opinion, what I would like to see them do, you know, is give her the opportunity to have some really intense training somehow. That's probably going to have to come from Oliver. I had a thought while I was watching this, and you kind of tell me what you think about this. But if you and you know what, I should have. It was a recent thought. It wasn't long ago before we started recording that I had this thought. So I apologize for not kind of doing the research. But there was a comic story. It might have been the Green Arrow comic, the Longbow Hunters. I could be wrong about that. But there was a story where Canary was kidnapped and beaten very brutally.
Hunters. Yeah.
Was that the Longbow Hunters?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, she was chained up and she was definitely beaten physically, but I think it was also intimated that she was raped in the storyline.
Yeah, maybe. I had kind of looked at that at one point and it could have gone either way, you know,
yeah.
Whether they didn't show it or say that specifically, but so I wondered if maybe they might do something like that in order for her to have that sort of brutal training, you know, to get a little bit better fast. And I don't know. I have no idea if they're going that way. I haven't seen anything to indicate that, but it would give them that opportunity to pull a story from the comics and give her the opportunity to really be thrown into the fire as far as abilities of a hero.
Yeah, that was also an interesting story because, of course, in the comic books, Canary has the canary cry as part of, you know, from her vocal cords. She can actually scream with the intensity mm-hmm. to injure people and shatter glass and all that. And because of the beating, she actually lost the power. So she was just a normal person and had to rely on just her battle training and didn't have really superpowers anymore, which was interesting for that. That's an interesting idea. I guess I'm kind of hesitant to just say that, well, you know, putting her through a physical trauma like that would, you know, cause her to get the training that she needed to, you know, get any better out there on the streets. Though, what was it we were talking about that, all these characters were going through earlier in the season? It was that they had to go through their own like trial by fire. What was a crucible, right?
Oh yeah.
So she's got an emotional crucible she's gone through, but she really has not faced that event yet as Canary, or you know, in this
right.
guise. So. I mean, there is hope for something along those lines, but yeah, I don't know if it would. I mean, it's possible. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks? We've got an episode coming up called Canaries, which supposedly will, you know, or presumably will focus on Laurel. So maybe there's, you know, maybe they're planning something for that. So that's mm-hmm. an interesting idea. She also. Continues to lie to her father about the fact that Sarah is still in town, or not necessarily lie, but by, well, I know, I guess she's straight out.
No,
lying.
She's flat out lying.
I mean, she started to intimate basically that, oh, well, you know, I haven't talked to her or whatever, but no, now she said that, you know, her sister's in town, but just busy or whatever it was. So
yeah, he you know, he knows, well, he thinks she's in town because, well, he's actually seen her on the news, who he thinks is Sarah,
right?
And he's heard reports that woman came into the police station and reported that right. she was saved by a woman in black, a blonde woman in black leather.
Yeah.
But
yeah, gee, that could be
you know, honestly, when I thought of that, I'm like, well, you know what if they started inspiring other people to do the vigilante thing, but
like the Dark Knight, where you've got all the guys dressed up like Batman.
Exactly. Well, not exactly.
I'm not wearing hockey pads.
except much prettier.
Yeah.
So, and Laurel says, "Oh no, she is. I haven't heard from her. No, she's such a bad liar." I mean, we continue to say that.
Well,
but
then she takes it to that other level. I'm like, "Oh my God, Laurel, you're an idiot." Because she, you know, she's all backlit. She's talking to her. Well, she talks to her dad just on the phone using the voice transmogrifier thing that Felicity came up with, whatever they called it.
Is that what it's called, a transmogrifier?
I don't
straight know. From Calvin and Hobbes. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. And then she appears on the fire escape and talks to him and says, "I love you, Daddy. I can't stay right now. I got to go." And I'm like, right now, like, you need to tell him the truth now. I don't think it's going to kill him. I mean, it's. I think that's a silly thought. It's like,
well,
that it's really going to kill him. I mean,
I don't think it's going to kill him, but see, now I worry. The longer she keeps it from him,
yeah,
the worse this is getting. I mean, now she's in a position where not only does she have to tell him that Sarah's dead, but you also have to say, yeah, you know what? That wasn't Sarah. That was me. And,
yeah,
oh, yeah, by the way, I'm putting my life in danger now, and I don't have any training like Sarah. I mean, this is just getting worse and worse.
Yeah, that's going to all come to a head before the end of the season, and it's not going to be pretty. So
yeah, I'm thinking that's going to be a big hurdle that they have to face toward the end of the season. I don't know what she's thinking. I mean, I just don't. I don't mind her. I don't want you to take this the wrong way. I'm actually really liking the character of Laurel much more than I was last season.
I think there's more interesting stuff going on to talk about and think about with her. I mean, they actually are they're moving her character along rather than kind of just having her stagnate. But you have to wonder. I saw online somebody called her a sociopath, and I don't know that that's the correct word for it, but in I'm not a psychologist or psychologist, I guess. But she is, I mean, there's something going on with her because she's grieving, and then she gets out on the street and thinks that, you know, just her act of her defying these bad guys is going to keep her safe or something like that. And you've got this guy, you know, Brick, who, thank God, he doesn't really like to beat up women. Otherwise, I think, you know, she'd be pasted all over the wall right now.
Man. I don't understand what how she thinks she can handle this guy. Now, you know, going out and taking care of, you know, muggers and, you know,
she still couldn't handle
after
that
women.
Properly. I mean,
no.
I mean, she couldn't. she rescued the woman, which is good, but she gets herself cut, which is not a problem. I mean, you know, everybody else has gotten injuries on the team, but, you know, that it's one of those things. I don't know. It seems like it's almost like she's got a death wish. You know, that she's putting herself in a position of great bodily harm because it's like, you know, she just doesn't care anymore. It's like, I've lost my sister. I've lost, you know, this guy who I used to date and now we're kind of friends and I don't know what we are. You know, and she's just kind of going off the deep end almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what Oliver's going to have to take care of. I think he will.
I am looking forward to that confrontation just because, I mean, it's going to be one of those things where it's like, you know, it's probably going to start like, how can you be so stupid? And she's going to get all upset and stuff. And you know, and then there's going to be an emotional climax to it where he's like, I really care for you or I love you or something like that. And, you know, then he's like, fine, I will train you, you know, and that's how it's going to come down, I think. But, yeah, right now, I mean, it's interesting, I think, to watch. It's kind of it's almost like a train wreck because you just can't turn away. And, even though he's called Brick, it's, luckily he has nads of clay, because that's how she was able to escape. So,
well, I guess. I mean, what do you? And maybe that's. It's kind of like his Achilles heel, or his Achilles something. it would work. It would work. Even the strongest guy. I mean, there's.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's just bad. That there's just. It's just bad stuff waiting to happen there. And, you know, but that makes for interesting drama and, you know, kind of the, superhero. There's something superhero-y about that because, you know, it's, she's going to go through this trial and either get herself killed or come out, you know, a hero on the other side, I guess.
Yeah.
Then we've got Roy and Diggle, who both are of the same opinion that she is nuts and that she shouldn't be doing this, but she has really made up her mind. So they are, let's see, did we see Diggle in action this week? He was more running stuff from the base, wasn't he?
Yeah, he flew a helicopter. I think that was about the extent.
That's right.
Extent of his, of his action this week, I think.
But we saw Roy out there, you know, doing more work as, you know, in the red costume, which really, that's great. I love seeing that. And but he is not completely up to snuff. I mean, he's much better than Laurel.
Yes.
But he's no Oliver.
Yeah. And here's, I had a thought about Roy this week as I'm watching him kind of fight on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He is a sidekick. I mean, I don't mean that in a derogatory way.
Sure.
He truly is a sidekick. He's got a lot of skills. He's very talented. He's he knows a lot of the things that Oliver knows now, you know, and he's real good with bow and arrow. But by the way, yeah, headshot, Roy, headshot. Come on. He doesn't have nearly the talent of Oliver, which he wouldn't, which is good, which makes him the sidekick. I really want to see in the evolution of this series over however many seasons they go. I want them to take up his abilities so he becomes more than a sidekick as they go through. I don't want him to be all superhero Oliver-y yet. Mm-hmm. But I do want him to increase. I don't want him to stay where he is now throughout the whole series.
Well, I think
in other words, I don't want him to be a sidekick by the end of the series. I want him to be Arsenal.
Oh, and I think they are moving that way. I mean, I think they are progressing and slowly. What I think would be interesting is, you know, when did we meet him? Did we meet him first season or was it beginning of second?
No, first season.
Okay.
Yep.
So if this show goes 5 seasons, at least, you know, by the end of the 5th season, he might be as good as Oliver was at the beginning of the first, right? I think that might be kind of cool to have his training kind of mirror Oliver's over the course of 5 years, because Oliver's training is the flashbacks and Roy's training is now. So, I agree with you. I think, and I don't know that I necessarily call him a sidekick. I mean, sidekick just, it kind of has that, like, you know, Robin versus the Caped Crusader sort of vibe to it. I might even say protege. You know, that indicates he's being trained and stuff like that. So
I'm going to stick with sidekick because right now I think that's what he is. I think he doesn't quite have the skill to be that true hero on his own, which is what I think we're seeing.
Okay.
So and I don't mean it in a bad way. I don't mean it in a bad way at all. I think sidekicks are good.
I'm just waiting. You know, I just don't want – what I'm concerned about is we're going to get all sorts of emails from sidekicks, you know, because, you know, I know you say you don't mean it derogatory, but, you know, some people just take it that way. And sidekicks, you know, they get very, you know, testy about that kind of stuff. So
you know what? Embrace your sidekickiness.
Okay.
I got to stop making up words tonight.
As long as you keep writing them down, maybe we'll post them on the blog at some point on Facebook.
Sidekickiness. Okay, I'm going to have to write that one down.
Okay. I didn't believe him the other week, and then he sent me a picture, and he goes, no, seriously, here's the list. And I'm like, wow, those are all the words we've invented, isn't it?
Yeah, those were all from S.H.I.E.L.D., though. Now I'm going to have to add an arrow appendix.
Another interesting duo in this episode, continuing on from where they were last week, was Ray and Felicity. And I think we talked about this sort of last week. Felicity came to the point where she embraces the idea that, you know, what they're doing is for good. It's not that they're not working for the people that have died. They're working for the people that are still alive and that are out there and, you know, that are counting on them. And, you know, they're friends and the people of the city and everything like that, which we didn't get quite into that detail, but basically, you know, I think we were discussing some of that last week.
So I really actually kind of see the same hero development in Ray as I'm seeing in Roy and Laurel here in this episode. Ray is kind of, although he's like in the infant stages of superhero, you know, he's in the embryonic stages of superhero yet, because he hasn't even been born as a hero. He's just got this idea.
But he's got money.
He's so, a lot of money, actually. A lot of money.
And a helicopter. So.
Almost not, but.
Yeah, I promise I won't break it.
He had some fantastic lines in this episode, and I'm glad they're kind of continuing with that, because Felicity has been a real downer lately, and I need to get back to their banter. I love their banter.
Yes.
So I like where they're going with this. I like how they they resolved this issue with Ray and Felicity and the hero complex, you know, that Ray is developing here, because Felicity was going to have to be in on it. You know, she was going to have to. And I like how she kind of worked out her problems with him doing that. And now she's laying it flat out for him. You know what? You know what? With me here, you're not going to die now. See, that's good.
We can do this.
I have a feeling she is really gonna get this ball rolling. I don't think it ever would have started without her.
Oh yeah. I mean, because you know she made that quantum processor. Duh. It's like,
oh, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. Oh, and just talking about his lines where she's like, you got this, you know, suit with laser beams. He's like, laser beams? That's ridiculous. No, it's compressed light things, and that's not working because I can't figure out how this chip works. So,
right.
Yeah, I like the way that Brandon Routh plays him. It's like,
I do too.
He's, I mean, and part of this I think is the writing, but it seems like there's a scene going on, and he just walks in, and he's like, "Hey, by the way, you know, I was just," and he's just talking, right? He was already talking when he walked in. He doesn't care what's going on. It's just, hey, it's all about me, and it's part self-centered, it's part self-deprecating. And it just makes for some amusing moments on the show.
Yeah, I think he's doing a great job. I did have a couple moments in this episode concerning Ray that I was just kind of like, what? I mean, first of all, Lance, I think it was Lance saying, you know, the police department is going to need a lot of money if we're going to be getting people back out there.
Yeah.
He comes in and goes, you know, I got money, but he wasn't in the room when Lance said that. So I'm not sure how he heard that. I watched it twice and I'm like, just have him come in earlier. How could he have possibly heard that? But that wasn't the big thing. The other thing, why was he with the mayor when she met with Brick? I mean, what was his purpose being? I liked that he was there because I liked him standing up to Brick.
Oh, yeah.
But it just didn't make any sense to me. Why would he be there?
Okay, so I believe the way that everything went was that he came and told Felicity that he's there for the meeting. She's like, we don't have the meeting with the mayor. This is before Brick captured the alderman. And he's like, oh, no, I told the mayor that we'd move it up because of this crazy guy running around. So my question is at that point is like, how did Brick know that the meeting was going on at that moment? Like to be able to break into the mayor's office and capture the alderman.
Sure. I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility of him kind of staking out the place.
Sure.
So he sees when everybody shows up.
Right. And I'm sure there's things to, you know, talk about how that could happen. I mean, I don't think that's that big a deal. Maybe it is, but you know, maybe we've got a mole or he's got the place bugged or someone's not who they appear to be or something like that. But I'm just kind of freestyling on that right now. I hadn't really even thought about that. But I think at that point, because Ray stood up to one of the henchmen, you know, and, you know, Felicity talked to him about that later. I believe there was some discussion there about him, because Felicity had said something about him providing money and something else.
Yeah, I mean, he was involved, and he mentioned when he was talking to Felicity that he was a leader of the city, and they were all meeting together, you know, because he was kind of Ray is a leader of the city.
Right.
He's not an elected official, but somebody who's involved, obviously, very closely.
Right.
And I get that. I just don't – I mean, why would he go to this meeting with the mayor? It seems – it didn't seem very natural, I guess, that he would be there. But again, you know, no big deal. It just was
– yeah.
It kind of put some question marks over my head as I was watching. But I do like how they're developing him. I mean, he's – and I really, really like Brandon Routh. I mean, I got to kind of give him props for the character because they could have put, you know, just about any actor in there for this. But he fits so well with Felicity and with the – the way that they're developing this character of Ray Palmer to become the Atom, it works out really well.
Well, and also the chance that, you know, I mean, he was Superman at one point, and a lot of times companies, you know, don't want to have somebody who's already played a character for them playing another character for them, you know, because of any kind of typecasting or anything like that. Now, obviously, Superman's somebody that a number of different actors have played. So I think it's great that, you know, everybody thought, well, you know, he's not super closely identified with Superman, so I think we can put him in there. The only other actor I can really think of that's done that kind of leap is Chris Evans, who played the Human Torch in two Fantastic Four movies and then moved over to become Captain America now. So,
yeah.
And I can't really see anybody else as Captain America. And I mean, I still think of him as the Human Torch, but it's, you know, he's different. He's a good enough actor that he can differentiate himself between the two roles. And I think that's what Brandon Routh is doing as well. I'm seeing a little bit more of the character he played in Chuck, in Ray Palmer than I am of any kind of Superman, pieces or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I didn't see him in Chuck. I remember that he was in it, though. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think my wife watched it. She is a gigantic Brandon Routh fan since he's been in Superman.
Yeah, yeah. Chuck, you should watch Chuck at some point. It's a fun sci-fi spy show that spoofs yep. all the genre and pop culture things. And, you know, there's Star Wars references all over the yeah. place in it as well. So
I did. I saw several episodes right at the beginning there. It was good. Yeah. I just was too busy to get into it, but
yep.
So digging Ray, and I like him and Felicity, although I anticipate some uncomfortable moments once Oliver gets back, because it seems as if Oliver still has little feelings there for Felicity.
I think that was all I was gonna say. That was Felicity's,
it was Oliver
dream. Right,
yeah,
it
was, no, Oliver's, that was Oliver's dream.
Yeah, that was I was like, oh, we're seeing a wait, this isn't a flashback. Wait, what's going on?
Yeah, then I started wondering. It seems like he's still thinking about that whole sword through the chest thing. Come on, Oliver, get over it.
Can I
That's
just
been,
point
it's
out
It's been weeks.
So I had posted a picture on our Facebook of where the sword went through. And in the video of the climb, the sword seems to go right under his right pectoral and kind of out the center of his back. Now, where Tatsu has bandaged him, it's around his abdomen. I think they are totally cheating where they stabbed him. You know,
all right,
not to mention that, you know, he fell off this giant cliff and landed and really didn't break any bones. You
let's
know,
pull
just...
this up here. Let me see. Yeah. Yeah, so, I'm looking at the picture. Yeah, I agree. You know what? I think, if I recall, even in his dream, it was higher.
In
where
his
bandage
dream,
is.
Yeah, it was more. It was kind of near his sternum, almost. I think so. Anyway, I feel like they're cheating it way down with the bandaging and everything like that. Just to, you know, it's just a flesh wound. It's not like it really went through any major organs, though. It did. Before we get on to talking about Oliver and Tatsu and Maseo and stuff, let's finish up our Starling City crew here. I want to talk a little bit about Thea. Interestingly enough, I am really enjoying seeing Thea at this point. She is standing up to Malcolm, and you know, he's like, he is, you know, this crazy, amazing archer, killer, businessman, you know, assassin, and he's running scared. And I hadn't really thought about it this way. And she just, you know, is kind of like, you taught me not to be afraid, so why are we running? He should be running from us. And at that point, you know, if I were her dad and was trained and had this scary demon head coming after me, I'd be like, you know what, you don't know what's going on. You know, don't be naive. But he kind of is like, okay, fine, so we'll stay, which I don't know that that's the best thing. But I agree with her reasoning in the fact that if they run, if he's going to come and find and kill them, why should they be running? I mean, why die in some backwoods hole-in-the-wall place? Might as well die in, you know, in home where there's the potential of having other people help you out, you know? So I'm enjoying, this,
She made a convincing point, and I thought she, played everything real well this week
with her dad.
Yeah.
And as you put down here in our notes, that Merlin is, he's telling the truth-ish.
Yeah. Well, so, man, I at first I thought he was going to go all out and tell her kind of what was going on. Not all out. Nothing about her killing Sarah.
I mean, he's gone as far as he normally goes. It's not necessarily lying. He gives enough of the truth and just omits, you know, certain really important things, I guess.
Yeah, well, he changed one thing drastically. Okay, at the end of his story, which was why Ra's al Ghul's after him.
Oh, yeah.
Because it wasn't because of the undertaking at all. That's not why Ra's al Ghul's after him. At least I don't think so, is it? I guess he wasn't really happy about that, though, was he? That was why he was on the run in the first place.
Yeah, that was why he was on the run in the first place.
But wasn't Ra's al Ghul, didn't he put the death mark on him because of Sarah? No, because he doesn't know it was him, does he?
No.
It was the undertaking.
Yeah, yeah. So he's truthful enough about that. It's that
I guess so.
He had Sarah killed, who Ra's al Ghul basically didn't seem to care about until she was dead, it seemed like, as a way to frame Oliver, and you know, to make sure that Oliver would be the one that would have to fight and then have the potential to take Ra's al Ghul out. So
okay, so my question about Merlin then is,
okay,
what are his motives for hiding information about Oliver from Thea? Why doesn't he just tell her?
That he knows that he went to battle Ra's al Ghul and died.
Everything. That he's Arrow, that he's dead, well, supposedly dead. That, I mean, why not? Why not just lay it all out for her?
Well,
And this would have been a good opportunity because she's like, look, tell me the truth. Tell me what's going on.
I think part of it would invite, well, why was he having to go battle Ra's al Ghul? Right? Because that would potentially lead to the question of, well, because he's trying to protect you. Well, why is he trying to protect me?
I see what you're saying. Right? So it all kind of leads back to him.
You know, like I say, lying is just a slippery slope, right? Because once you, you know, start down that path, forever will it dominate your destiny.
Do you say that? Is that you?
I say that. That's what I say. Right. That's me. Quote, TM. Registered trademark. He wouldn't tell her that Oliver is Arrow, that's interesting. I don't know. I can only imagine that there's still something of use. So Merlin, besides being this assassin, as I mentioned, he's also, I mean, he's a very successful businessman. And, you know, lots of business people make their trade with information, and, you know, politics and information and stuff, not only, you know, just in whatever, you know, product they're selling or manufacturing or whatever. So there is probably some value in that information that he doesn't want to just give away at this point, until he's either forced to reveal it or, you know, something else comes along.
Sure.
Where he,
yeah,
can,
well, that does give him a little leverage over Oliver.
Yeah.
So
right.
That could be
right, because he can always.
But
yeah,
except he
true.
Thinks Oliver's dead.
Yeah, he came. I mean, he came back and said he did. Does he really believe that? I don't know. You know,
I think he does.
Lying liars and the lies they tell.
He went all the way to.
On the next
Sally
Jesse
are.
Raphael. Yeah.
He went all the way to the, you know, mountain to confirm that Oliver was gone, all the way, you know, behind Verdant.
The 5 miles away or whatever. So.
Yeah, interesting. I still dig Merlin. I'm so glad they brought him back. What a fantastic character.
It's
Don Barrowman can do whatever he wants with Merlin. I don't care. I don't care. Just keep doing it.
So, okay, so this leads me into some discussion about Maceo and the League. The question that still comes to to my mind is what drove Maceo to join the League of Assassins. So yeah. We got a lot more information about what was happening in Hong Kong.
In the flashbacks, right?
In the flashbacks.
Okay, now, hey, can I say something about the flashbacks quick? Yeah. Just because I think it was last week that I was mentioning how I wasn't digging the flashbacks lately, just last few episodes. They were too short and there were too many interspersed, you know?
Yeah.
I think there were only – let me look at my notes. I think there were only three. There were three flashbacks this week.
Okay.
They were spaced very well. And I thought they had a kind of a good pace.
Yeah.
It fit much better this week. So anyway, I just wanted to say that as far as the
flashback. And any flashback where Oliver is sliding across a bar while firing a gun.
Yeah, there you go. A little TJ Hooker flashback action.
I was going for it. I thought it was a little more Point Break action there. But
okay. Yep. Yep.
You know, nothing terribly specific, but that was.
I think anytime you slide across something while you're doing action, that's just a TJ Hooker move.
Yeah,
even if it's from Point Break.
I definitely see that now that you mentioned that. But so we find out that Maceo was actually trying to double cross Waller and was actually going to give the Alpha Serum to China White in order to get his wife back, because as he said, he would do anything for his family, anything. Mm-hmm. And I feel that. That right there, that is the key line for that character. He would do anything for his family, which means that since he and Tatsu are separated and he's in the league and she, I think she said she still loves him, but they don't see each other. I mean, there's this rift and we know that the son isn't around right now, or at least, you know, we haven't seen him. Mm-hmm. That, you know, something happened, maybe, you know, in order to save his son, he had to join the League of Assassins. I don't know. There's still a little much of a gap there, but,
Yeah. I mean, they can extend that part of the flashback to find out, or his son died.
Right. Which is what we've mentioned before.
Right.
So also,
He can do anything for his family, but he won't do that.
I just had an idea. Maybe his son grew up a little bit, because it's been 5 years, right? So his son would be older. Maybe his son, you know, he's gone through a growth spurt and has had some plastic surgery and is now DJ Douchebag.
Oh. Unfortunately, that actually would fit.
That is so comic book right there.
Oh, please no. Please no. I like Maceo's son.
Yeah, exactly. But how about that? I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but in any of the in any of the DC Earths where alternate realities occur, did you think that this DJ was going to be working for the League of Assassins?
No. Maybe I should have.
You sound so disappointed.
No, I'm not. I'm not disappointed. It's just that whenever I see him or think of him, I only have one thought, and that's like, get him off. So, no, I get very distracted by that character. So much
so. Is he so dreamy?
You know, I think it's the hair. It might be the hair.
Yeah.
Or the voice. Or the way he talks. Or the fact that he's there. It's one of those things. I don't. No. At least now he has something interesting about him that I don't want to strangle.
He makes Laurel's character look amazing. You know, because now I have something else to look at and go, oh my God, what is this? So
I just want Laurel to stab her heel into his hand.
I have another heel.
That's a good line. Yeah. I kind of wish she hadn't said just kidding, but I know why she did.
Yeah. I thought that really ruined the moment, her saying just kidding too. That really stood out. I mean, again, I too understand why I think she said that, but
I do, but everything else she did was, you know, unethical.
Oh, I'm just going to write this. I'm just writing stuff on here. Nope. So just, don't, look, it says it right here.
Maybe if she'd said just kidding to that too, then it would have covered her bases. But,
right.
No, for the now one thing that did shocked me even more that he was with the League and that he knew whatever language that was. I couldn't place it. Sorry. Was that he was talking to Maceo.
Yes. So Maceo is saving Oliver, but he's also hunting Oliver's sister. Do you think that's going to put Oliver and Maceo at odds at any point?
Yeah. I think so. Did I hesitate too long on that answer?
but don't they have a life debt, or is it considered resolved now that Maceo saved Oliver's life? Like, ooh, has it been repaid?
Number one, I think it's been repaid.
Okay.
But this is going to sound stupid, but he doesn't seem to be really necessarily hunting them, but Ra's al Ghul is hunting them, and he seems to be doing it for Ra's al Ghul. So that's, you know, it's kind of a loose connection there, I guess. But
yeah, well, Maceo is really walking the line of kind of that double agent, right? He's in this place, and he has to keep up the appearance that he is working for the organization that he's a part of. Hence, having to slice his neck to, you know, say, well, Oliver escaped, and he did this to me, you know, and I barely escaped my life, I'm sure, stuff like that. And continue doing what he's doing, but there's still just the ulterior motive. We don't know why he's there in the first place. Maybe he's on a mission for Argus and is infiltrating the League for Amanda Waller. Again, bringing us back to the stuff in the flashbacks and...
That is possible.
Because he said he was doing the things with the, you know, stealing the Alpha... Or giving the Alpha to China White, you know, for himself, because he'd do anything for his wife. I believe that would make him turn. But I'm also wondering if that was also a mission that was given to him. Like, you need to do that so you can infiltrate the Triad.
Yeah, maybe. He doesn't. The way he acts around, Tatsu and even Oliver, doesn't indicate that much. But again, I mean, you know, a good double agent will not reveal that to anybody. So, that would certainly fit. And then at least then I could sleep a little bit better at night and not worry so much about what he's going to do.
I could just see you. You're like waking up in the middle of the night, and your wife's like, "Josh, you okay? What's the matter?" It's like, oh.
I will admit that the night that I watched this, the night that I watched this was very late. I was up late and I had to watch the episode late and went straight to bed. And I did dream about this episode all night. So I have thought a lot about
You've been
these
working
things.
It out in your head. There you go.
I have been working it out.
So one other thing that you put down in our notes here, and I don't know that I would have characterized it this way, but I'm interested to see what you have to say about it, is that you put Oliver is in remarkably good spirits.
Oh, it just shocked me that, you know, he's in his in this cabin there. He's like, oh, Tatsu. Oh, more herbs. Oh, you herb making friend, you.
Your
oh, penicillin.
Tea tastes like penicillin.
This tastes like penicillin, you naughty girl. Oh, look, Maceo's out there chopping wood. Hey, friend, come help me. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He just seems so happy. It was very un-Oliver-like.
He's hopped up on all sorts of the atmosphere at the in the mountains.
He's like,
and drugs.
Hey, Maceo, come here, man. Oh, it's so good to see you. You're
Sup,
leaving.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, I guess he was. I mean, he's just so happy to be alive.
No, it was okay. It didn't bother me. It was a little surprising because Oliver's much more brooding than that usually. But
he is a little more.
You're right. He is happy to be alive, and he's happy that his friend saved him. He's happy to see Tatsu. You know, so I can't blame him. I mean, I would probably be like that too. Oh my God, I died, but I'm not dead.
Yeah.
So that's cool. It did. And so it was another one of those things that kind of gave me a double take a little bit. I don't want to say it took me out of the story, because it really did not take me out of the story.
I really did enjoy seeing him and Tatsu have some good conversation together, because in the flashbacks this season they've been so at odds, and she hasn't They were starting to get a little bit closer before she got kidnapped. But obviously there's been some other bonding after her rescue in the flashbacks and before his death.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I am anxious to see him kind of wanting to get back to Starling City, which it seems like is going to happen sooner than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to mention this just real briefly. I'll just say something about this. But I don't think they'll do this because obviously, clearly, he's still in bad, bad shape. But
yeah,
what would really drive the point home of how important Oliver is, if he got back and finally had to face Brick face to face, and Oliver just takes him out just like that, you know, just to prove how good he is compared to all these other people that are there.
Oh, so they've been working on trying to get Brick taken care of for four episodes.
And... Not to make them look bad,
but to
really
not.
Show how good he is
yeah.
and to show how much they need him. But again, I don't think they'll be doing that because he's still in really bad shape and it looks like the city's in even worse shape. So,
right.
But I'm anxious to see him get back to Starling City and be Arrow again.
Sounds like it may be a couple more episodes still. Doctor's orders. Doctor and producer's orders. But I did see a photo of Stephen Amell from something they were shooting, and he was not he may have still been bandaged, but he was wearing clothes and he was not in a cabin in the mountains. So I think it's pretty safe to say he's coming back to Starling City soon.
Well, it turns out cold, is really good for you when you're injured. Despite the fact you fall from a 100-foot cliff, that cold will kind of cushion your fall a little bit.
Because of the snow and the cold, yeah.
The snow and the cold, yeah. No, I saw it in Frozen. I saw it in the movie Frozen. Oh, well, it also works.
Maybe he caught an updraft that sort of slowed his descent, and so he landed very gently in the snow.
Snow and cold and a little will. You know, that's important too.
All right.
All right.
So a lot of interesting things going in this episode. I thought this episode was a stronger episode than last week's return from their break. I felt they were kind of getting everything, like turning the engine on again last week, kind of getting all the cogs working. And this week I thought they were firing on all cylinders. They ran through all the different storylines, put a lot of stuff in there for us. I thought this was a much more enjoyable episode than
agreed. I think it'll make it even stronger when he is back.
When Oliver's back. Yep.
Oliver's back. Yes.
Cool. We've got a few references, but before I do that, we don't have any specific piece of feedback we want to focus on, but we would like to thank some of the individuals who've been posting on our Facebook page or who have been tweeting at us over the course of several weeks here over winter break. They were talking about stuff on our pages, and these are just some of the names. We just want to say thank you very much to Armando, Ollie Verdant, Sean, Rob, and Matt for just keeping the conversation alive on our page and giving us some different things to think about or to chuckle at or just liking the different things that Josh and I post on our pages. So
absolutely. So keep interacting there, you know. And on Twitter we have, people like Kyle and Tyler and DSNRS. I don't know what name that is, but they're always kind of interacting with us on Twitter too. So
and news stories and stuff like that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Thank you for that. That's always great. So hey, keep it up. We love interacting with you guys. It's fun.
Exactly. Yep. So keep that up. And we're, like I said, we read everything. We try to get to as much as we can, but we are busy folk as well. But this is a nice little shout out here that will serve its purpose, I think. A couple references that I thought were cool. I'm going to do these in reverse order here than what I've got, Josh, because I think the first one is probably the coolest. So I'll leave that to the end. So we had Red Arrow mentioned on the TV. They mentioned that the man in the red outfit, they called him Red Arrow, which is
cool. Yeah, that surprised me. That was awesome.
Because that is actually another name that Roy has used in the comic books besides Speedy, besides Arsenal. When he finally graduated to becoming basically a superhero on his own, he became Red Arrow. So that was cool.
You know what else that gives potential to is, you know, they're reporting about this on Channel 52, of course.
Oh, yeah, Channel 52, right.
And they called him Red Arrow.
Yep.
Which opens up the door for them to call him
Black Canary.
Sorry. Yes.
Yes.
Green Arrow. They didn't call Black Canary. What did they call her?
They just called the woman in black.
Woman in black, right.
Yeah. And if you notice, Laurel at this point is still referring to herself, and everybody else is still referring to her as Canary. She hasn't really adopted the Black Canary moniker yet, which is telling. That means that I think that she hasn't realized that she is her own person. She's still trying, regardless of what she is saying, that she knows her sister's dead and all this kind of stuff, I think she's still trying to fill her shoes instead of being her own individual.
Matter of fact, I'd go far as to say she's trying to be her.
Yeah.
She's trying to be Sarah. She even kind of said that, something close to that the other day. I mean, the other day on this episode. It was the other day, you know?
Yeah, it was the other day, right. Ray Palmer mentioned Felicity mentioned Ray's dwarf star alloy, which is what he's building his Atom Smasher suit out of. Bell Rev, the prison, was mentioned, which is an interesting mention because it's normally, at least in the comic books, in Louisiana. And for those of you that listen to our Flash podcast, I have to say, oops, I threw this in as a reference on our Flash podcast. Though I'm sure it'll be brought up there. It's all in the same universe, so it's not that bad. But that's the problem when you're watching like a number of shows in a week. They all do tend to blur together after a while. And then there's a book that Thea is reading, and you can make out just part of the cover of it. It's Brad Meltzer's Book of Lies. First off, Brad Meltzer, he's a book author, but he's also written a number of comics, including Identity Crisis, which we've talked about on this podcast before, featured Deathstroke and Green Arrow in some very pivotal scenes. But Book of Lies is I think I might have heard about this when it came out, but it sounds really interesting. Basically, it's a book that assumes a connection between the story of Cain and Abel and the weapon that Cain used to slay Abel, and the father of Jerry Siegel, who was the creator of Superman, and how he, or is either he or his brother, I think it was his brother that was killed, Jerry Siegel's brother or his father. Anyway, it ties in Cain and Abel and Superman and the creator of Superman. And
that's not a true story, is it?
I don't know.
I looked to see, I couldn't tell, but man, it sounded really intriguing to me.
It's an interesting melding of fiction because I think it's about a character that is uncovering all this information. So it's a fiction book, but that is a good question. I don't know if it's Mitchell Siegel. I'm not sure if that is.
I'm gonna have to look more into this because this book sounded very interesting.
So anyway, I think the point is that she's reading a book called Book of Lies, which that completely covers Thea's life for at least this season. You know, it's also Malcolm Merlyn and Oliver. I mean, it's basically everybody in her family. It's very telling and a nice little in-joke by the producers or the director or the set designer, whatever, you know, whoever decided to give her that particular book. So thought that was pretty cool. And then Channel 52, like we mentioned earlier. So I don't think there was much else. I watched the episode again and I didn't really catch anything else
lot of other Easter eggs that you'd find in there. I looked hard in this one, but it was mostly just, you know, shots of an intimidating brick from 2 feet below his nose.
Right. So, well, Josh, it was great talking to you about this, and that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Hey, we hope you guys enjoyed this episode. if you did, we'd love for you to leave us feedback on iTunes, okay? That would be fantastic if you get on there and give us some stars, maybe a good comment or two. Also, you can email us, greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Love hearing from you there. Interact with us on Twitter, @GreenJusticePod, and Facebook at facebook.com/GreenJusticePodcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I host here on randomchatter.com, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which right now we're covering Agent Carter, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. All of our shows are also available in the iTunes Store or through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us. We can't grow without listeners, and the best way to get listeners is for you to recommend us. We have a, you know, there's like a Venn diagram of the people that enjoy Arrow and watch that on TV, and then people that listen to podcasts, and we need to fill that intersection of Arrow fans that also listen to podcasts. So please mention us on, you know, social media or message boards or local comic shops, things like
your
that.
Local archery store.
Yeah, exactly. So, and remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.